You're listening to In Motion, a Masters of the Stage podcast. In Motion is a series of interviews dedicated to the voices of America's leading stage choreographers.
Hi, welcome to SDC Foundation's In Motion with Wendy Seib. Welcome to Chase Brock. Wonderful choreographer is here today to speak with us. Chase Brock is called prolific in both the New Yorker and the New York Times as a choreographer, director, and costume designer for theater, dance, opera, ballet, TV, and video games. As artistic director of Brooklyn-based theater dance company, The Chase Brock Experience, he has commissioned 7 original scores and created 31 original works, which have been performed in annual New York seasons, in addition to residencies, festivals, and tours from North Carolina to Maine. Freelance choreography includes Broadway's Be More Chill, Picnic, and Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, stage adaptations of Disney's animated features Hercules, the Public Theater, and The Hunchback of Notre Dame at La Jolla Playhouse, Paper Mill Playhouse, Berlin, Munich, Stuttgart, and all over Japan. Gounod's Romeo and Juliet at the Metropolitan Opera, PBS Great Performances, Lyric Opera of Chicago, and the Salzburg Festival, A Midsummer Night's Dream for Shakespeare in the Park, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver on HBO, Late Show with David Letterman, CBS, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade on NBC, and the best-selling video game Dance on Broadway for Nintendo Wii and PlayStation Move. Brock has spoken, taught, or choreographed at the Juilliard School, Barnard College, Columbia University, Yale School of Drama, NYU Center for Ballet and the Arts, Marymount Manhattan College, Pace University, Montclair State University, University of the Arts, University of North Carolina, Wilmington, and America Repertory Theater at Harvard University. Brock is a proud alumnus of Spark Camp at Harvard, Robert Wilson's Watermill Center, and Anne Reinking's Broadway Theater Project. Brock is a subject of the New England Emmy-nominated documentary Chasing Dance, and made his Broadway debut at 16 in the original cast of Susan Stroman's revival of The Music Man. Thank you so much for joining us today, Chase. We're very excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Wendy Seib. I'm so excited to be here.
Chase and I go back a little while, so we're very excited to be chatting with
each other. How long have we known each other?
Over 10 years, at least.
Yeah, I would definitely think so.
That's great.
I remember your piece School Days, which I loved so much.
That's my first feature film we're doing.
Really?
Yes.
Can you give us an exclusive
when that's going? No, this is about you! That's so sweet of you to remember.
I love that.
Thank you. Me too. So I just gave a wonderful profile of your background, which is, again, prolific, as the New Yorker says.
Thank you.
That's why you're here, because we don't only want to focus on choreographers that are in theater, but also choreograph across different media, which I think is sort of helpful in this day and age to continue working as a choreographer, but it's also exciting.
I feel like it's never been a better time to be a kind of crossover person who is interested in a lot of different things in a lot of different areas. And I don't know how you feel, but I felt like 20 years ago when I came to New York, you really had to say, this is the one thing that I do, and I'm going to only pursue that. And you really had to kind of convince everyone and paint that picture of one thing. And I found that sort of limiting, but I loved choreography, and so I was like, I'm going to be a theater choreographer then. And that was the one thing. And it is exciting that over those 20 years, you know, now I think I've been able to find my way into all of these different kinds of work, and even choreography, which we'll talk about, in these different media manifests differently. So the job requirement actually changes depending on what you're doing, even when you are the choreographer. So I find that really fascinating. And of course, my secret desire was to be a director. And my top secret kind of desire was to be a designer. And so I've dipped my toe into that in the last couple of years as well, which has been really fulfilling. But I think this is a kind of millennial remix moment where people are now able to do ballet and do theater and do modern dance and create their own solo performance and write their web series and audition for things and choreograph things. I think that's exciting. That's good for everybody.
I agree on all those accounts. What I'd like to know is sort of just how you got into choreography. Because usually, you know, for directors, where it's always acting, so choreographers, it's usually dancing. So I'd just love to know a little bit of your path that got you to, I guess, like your first Broadway show and then into concert dance.
Yeah, so I grew up in North Carolina, and, you know, I did a lot of summer programs, and the State Theater of North Carolina, Flat Rock Playhouse, was about a mile from my house, and so I was there seeing shows and taking children's theater classes and kind of moving through their apprentice track in my sort of very, very young years, and studying dance at local studios, and then, you know, again, on to summer programs, and one of those in particular was Anne Reinking's Broadway Theater Project. And it was a summer program she ran for maybe a decade or even more than that. And the first summer that I went there, it was 1997, and she had won, a month earlier, she had won the Tony for choreographing the Chicago Revival, and essentially left Chicago to come to run the summer program in July, a month later. And so it was a really charmed time to be meeting her, and she very quickly, we had a strong connection, and it felt, you know, I was obsessed with her. She was my teen idol, like probably every young dancer, especially at that moment. But I could see her brain at work, and she was directing, you know, a show for the apprentices and creating new choreography and transitions and segues, and just the way that she was, the vocabulary she was using and the way she was addressing essentially like a summer workshop production was so high level and so kind of demanding and so just with such love and professionalism. And I think we all felt like we were somehow channeling, you know, she was channeling Bob Fosse and kind of that era of director choreographer. And so certainly my interest had been in dancing, but I was always probably like you were, that kid who was rounding up the neighborhood kids and putting on shows, and I didn't call it choreography, but that's what I was doing. But when I was exposed to her and really being inside her process as a dancer, I think she raised the bar for me in every way. And I think I was just very, very creatively fired up by her and by the incredible level of rigor she brought to a group of summer students in Tampa, Florida. And I should mention too, the faculty she attracted, you know, Gregory Hines was our tap dance teacher, who's an amazing man and mentor. Stanley Donen, who directed the film Singing in the Rain and American in Paris, he was there speaking about directing. Jeff Calhoun was there restaging his own work and Tommy Toon's work, and Tommy Toon came as well. And, you know, Pat Birch, of course, who is really a legend. And Pat Birch is the example of maybe the first person I was able to have a kind of mentor, you know, mentor-student relationship with, who was working in across all media. I mean, she is a Broadway choreographer of some of the most iconic shows. You know, look no further than Grease. And, of course, a film choreographer and a film director. And she also created comic dance numbers for Saturday Night Live for Gilda Radner and Steve Martin, which, of course, I suspect has spoken to you if I know your work. And also music videos in the 80s as that was heating up. I mean, she really just, you know, and also she danced, studied with Martha Graham, and I think danced with Martha Graham. So it was like just this incredibly amazing group of faculty members and mentors that we had. And so I was inspired in a lot of different ways all at once around the creative process and around making dance and making theater. And as much as I loved performing Fosse dances and all of that, and I did love it, I think that seed got planted really in those summers, and I could feel myself kind of pulling back or sort of floating above the rehearsal and seeing that sort of outside eye and wanting more of that rather than wanting to desperately be at center stage myself.
And so from that, what was your sort of road into choreography, like your first choreographic piece?
So I made, you know, I choreographed in my junior high school and in my high school. And in fact, in junior high school, I had a really lovely, wonderful teacher, Peggy Bice, who was the, I can't remember the title. Yeah, I think like Arts and Enrichment was her title. And she was really almost creating special projects for kids who were interested in the arts. My entire school career was dotted with special projects and not much else. So I excelled in creating my own things, but not doing anything anyone actually assigned me. So I'm sort of still doing that. But anyway, she gave me the opportunity to basically, she reserved time in the gym, which functioned also as a theater, and allowed me to create essentially my own show, and held an assembly for the entire school, and I performed this show, which I was in, of course, because when you're like 12 years old, you're still in it, even if you're choreographing it or directing it, and some fellow dancers, I think three or four fellow dancers were in it, one of whose mother ran the follow spot, I felt it was very important and professional to have a follow spot in the gymnasium at 12 years old. And then the next year in high school, I actually rented my high school's theater and produced my own show there with fellow classmates of mine from Flat Rock Playhouse. And we, you know, created and performed a show. It was one night only, sold out, I think. But anyway, that was where I was getting that fix. And then at the same time, my young mind knew enough to know that I really needed to be in New York and I really needed to find a way to get into the Broadway community if I wanted to be working at that kind of Anne Reinking, Jeff Calhoun, Pat Birch level. And so I had a subscription to Backstage Newspaper when it was a newspaper, and it came to my house in North Carolina, and I saw a ad for the Music Man revival looking for teen dancers. And I had just been in it in community theater. And so I, with all the innocence of youth, thought, this is in the bag. I know the show. And convinced my parents to buy a plane ticket to New York. Went to an open call. There were about 600 kids there before they, I think they cut it off at 600, but I got in under the wire. And amazingly and happily, they hired three of us. And I actually did get that job. And so I spent then really 2 years in that production, which was an amazing introduction to the Broadway community in New York. And it was working with Susan Stroman at the height of her powers. She had just opened Contact in the Mitzi Newhouse when we started rehearsal. And then it was went back into rehearsal and moved to the Beaumont. And then she did Producers like less than a year later. So it was an extraordinary time to be working in her environment that she created. And that cast was really like a family. So there was so many generations of amazing actors and artists to learn from. And basically over the course of that run, I, you know, the thing that I loved the most about that run was the rehearsal process. And when we got out of that rehearsal room, I loved the work and I respected the work. And there was the novelty of performing on Broadway and doing the same show 8 times a week and wonderful things like the Tony Awards and all these times where you get to perform a number outside your theater in a new way. And all of that was fascinating to me. But the thing that I really loved the most was the rehearsal process and the creative process. And I thought, how can I get more of that? And actually, there was Marlo Hunter, who is now a really successful director and choreographer, was the SDC observer. And for the entire rehearsal process, she was near Stroman and she was near that team. And she was taking notes and watching and having little, you know, conversations with them. And I was a little jealous as a dancer in the show, and I thought, wow, I sort of want to be doing what she's doing. So I befriended her, and actually we became great friends, and over the years have now, you know, been sort of colleagues back and forth at different times in our careers. But that, you know, that was really interesting to me to see that and think I almost wish I was doing that instead of being in the show. And so over the course of that run, I bought a video camera, and I grabbed my castmates. And basically every Monday for about a year, I went into a studio at Ripley Greer or somewhere and made up a dance. And I would make up a dance in 3 or 4 hours and film it. And then, you know, with the intention of seeing if I had enough ideas and enough material to maybe produce a showcase. And then our run was cut short after September 11th. The one sort of, you know, decent part about that experience was that we ended up getting a very long notice. So we had about 3 months notice that we would be closing. And so I actually, the moment that kind of closing notice happened, everyone was auditioning for their next shows. And I thought, I'm not going to audition anymore. Actually, I'm going to rent a space and I'm going to put on this showcase that I've been working on. And I'm going to see if I can get an agent for choreography. And so I wanted to do it at 890 Broadway because that had been Michael Bennett's building. And I, in fact, called Elliot Feld at Ballet Tech, who was managing the building at that time, and I rented a room. And 2 months after we closed, I actually did produce a showcase of my work. And Stroman very generously came and gave me notes. And it was just amazing that she came. And Pat Birch came. And Tommy Walsh came, bless him. And so it was an amazing time. And in fact, I did get my first agent out of that, the lovely Ron Guiazda, who was at Rose and Stone Wender at the time. And so it was, that is the journey to how I sort of moved from really being a kid in North Carolina dreaming about doing all this to actually being in New York at the beginning of choreographing.
Sure, that's a wonderful journey. I wish I had Pat Virch around now. So.
Oh, she's the best.
I adore her. She's
She's on the advisory board of my dance company, and she, when she's available, will occasionally come and always gives me smart notes and ideas and very rigorous, you know, not just bouquets and roses, but actually giving me really tangible, useful advice.
Yeah, she's not going to pull any punches.
Nope.
No, which is great.
That's what you want.
Then can we also then speak a little about, and Pat Birch is sort of a good tunnel into this, where she's, like you mentioned, so prolific, and that, you know, you did Broadway as a dancer, and so did your own showcase, and then you mentioned your company. Well, I sort of want to talk about, like, what it's like to work in all these different mediums. What attracts you to them? What are their challenges? If you can just kind of maybe touch on a project in each area. Is that
absolutely? I love that idea.
Great, me too.
So the dual track, just briefly, that was happening while what we just talked about was all developing is right after that first showcase, one of the people I invited to that showcase was Denise Roberts Herlin, who is, of course, the absolutely invaluable, amazing founding director of Dancers Responding to AIDS, which is an extraordinary organization, which I'm sure the listeners know. And Denise had, of course, had an extraordinary career with the Paul Taylor Dance Company. And Paul Taylor, of course, had been an enormous inspiration of mine. And there was a piece of his that I saw as a teenager on PBS that particularly spoke to me. And it was to Field of Grass, which was to Harry Nilsson covers or songs. And I made a piece that was inspired by that. And I had a little program note about it. And I think that really caught Denise's eye, that like an 18-year-old, you know, was researching the past and looking at great American choreographers and hoping to be in that tradition. And so she reached out to me to see if I would want to bring that work to the New York City Festival of Dance, which was happening at the time. And it was the first of like 20 invitations she has made to me over the years. And in more recent years, DRA has commissioned my company 5 times, which is extraordinary. And presented us at Fire Island Dance Festival and Hudson Valley Dance Festival, and also on Broadway representing DRA at the Gypsy of the Year event. And so we've had a very, very dynamic and blessed partnership. And I always call her my fairy godmother of dance. And I think that's true. She is, you know, I grew up as a teenager half in theater, but then there was that part of me that was going to ballet from 3 o'clock in the afternoon to 9 o'clock at night. And I was studying with my amazing teacher, Ronnie Zink, and also Carlos Agudelo at Ballet Spartanburg in South Carolina. So my dad would drive me. There was another student as well, and our parents, we would kind of carpool, and one would do one day and the other would do the next. And we traveled down the mountain and got an amazing education in a really rigorous pre-professional ballet program. And so, you know, there was this part of me that had been a kind of hardcore dancer. And then there was this part of me that was like a musical theater misfit. And Denise Herlin really brought that dance side of me out again after I had put it a little bit away in order to kind of focus on Broadway and kind of get myself into the Broadway community. And so those early invitations by her really led me to the idea of, I resisted it for as long as I could, and then I finally realized I probably needed to start a company, even though the idea of that was overwhelming and insane sounding. And so when I was 23, I did start the Chase Brock Experience, and that name was originally a joke. We didn't have a name for the company, and so the dancers would always write something different on the dry erase board outside the studio every day, and that name stuck, and here we are 11 years later, and I would not have, if I had any idea we would endure this long, that would not have been the name of my company, but that's how life happens. And I produced the first concert not knowing if it would be a one-night-only thing or if there would be anything more, but I really felt I had to kind of get my purest ideas out in some form. And I felt truly content that if 12 of my friends came, it would have been worth it just to make that work and explore that. And amazingly, those first performances ended up selling out, and people started saying, when's the next concert? And then I realized, like, oh, I guess I do this now. And so, you know, that began kind of the very, very long process of creating a dance company and sustaining a dance company over what has now been a decade. And we've commissioned 7 original scores, the 7th of which will premiere this December. We have a new work, which will be our 31st work for the company. And it is our first evening length work titled The Girl with the Alkaline Eyes. And it is an AI thriller, a sort of sci-fi romantic story of creation and destruction. And it has a gorgeous commissioned score by Eric Dietz, who is a very gifted young composer. And there will be live music, and I'm very excited about that. So we continue to go strong after many, many, many years of that artistic dialogue with a group of what is now, I think, at the latest count, 67 dancers have passed through the company in the last 11 years. So that's a bit about the dance company. And, you know, those are, I would say, the two areas of my career that occupy the most space and time is mostly the musical theater work that I do on Broadway and off Broadway and all over, and then the work for my dance company. The sort of other media, to just talk about a couple since you asked, you know, I have gotten this wonderful dip into the world of opera through Bart Scheer, who, of course, is such a wonderful director, and invited me to do his production of Romeo and Juliet in Salzburg about a decade ago. And, you know, again, that production was a one summer kind of one-off opera festival show, and they brought it back. It was a big hit. They brought it back 2 years later, and then Bart kept calling, and ultimately it went to Lyric Opera of Chicago, and we ended at the Metropolitan Opera, and it has now played 2 seasons at the Met. So it was the New Year's Eve gala 2 years ago. So that has been an unexpected and amazing journey. And I think, and we can talk about this in more detail, I'll just give you an overview of a couple of these areas first. But the thing I would say that I love about opera is the scale. It's extraordinary. And of course, the music. I have had an amazing adventure in video games, which I never would have predicted. My agent at the time got a phone call from a video game studio, Longtail Studios, that was basically tasked by Ubisoft, who was their publisher, of creating a follow-up to the game Just Dance, which had just been released and was a smash hit. And so they were very quickly trying to make a lot more versions of that. And they wanted to do a Broadway game. And my agent felt that I would be, you know, the right person with that Broadway knowledge to be able to be a kind of catalog for them of what Broadway songs and numbers might work in a video game, but also young enough and interested enough in technology and kind of new media to really be able to try and experiment with what that form could contain. And so that was an amazing 2-year project that employed all of my company members as animation references. And it also paid the rental cost for a studio that we had for those 2 years. So we were able to work sort of 2 weeks on the video game and then 2 weeks on our company work and 2 weeks again on the video game. And it was an amazing, really, really fun time of experimentation. And the last thing I would say is, you know, as choreography goes, is working on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver has been one of the most fun and irreverent and amazing things. And to be making works of political satire that are shown on television, which I know is, you know, the medium that, say, Trump despises, you know, watches with such fury and rage, and television is really where he sort of sees his news. It's been amazing to have the pleasure of being aligned with a group of writers that smart and that savvy, and obviously an amazing artist in John Oliver. So I've done 4 episodes there, and we have done everything from lambasting Putin to Trump himself. I've gotten to, you know, we have rockets. I've gotten to have a marching band. I had the branches of government represented in Japanese mascot costumes with Bob Balaban. It's really been all over the map. And so it's been an amazing thing to do that. The last thing I would just say is, Obviously, I'm developing a bunch of new musicals as a director, and I'm sure you know that that process is a lot of readings and development and table work, and so that is largely where that part of my life exists. And then as a costume designer, you know, I really started that. I love fashion, and I have such respect for all the costume designers I've been blessed to work with. They're like my favorite people and favorite collaborators, but of course, with my dance company, we have no money, and so there are many times where I've just gone shopping and, you know, done it myself. And, you know, that has ended up being now something significant, like 5 or 6 works that I've designed. And a very exciting moment happened when Caleb Teicher, who is an extraordinary young dancer in my company and also an amazing choreographer with his own company, asked me to design costumes for one of his commissions from the American Tap Dance Foundation. And it was an absolute pleasure being able to design costumes for another choreographer for something that I had not choreographed and was not involved with that part. And so that was amazing. And David Parker happened to be in that work, and getting to design costumes for David Parker, who's a choreographic hero of mine, was an amazing experience. So I, you know, as you can guess from all that, I really love moving around between different media, and I think I would get too bored in any one area. It's like a grass is always greener thing. Once I've been with my company for a while, fundraising and doing that sort of solitary work, all I want to do is be in the room with a group of collaborators on a musical. And then usually once that's done, it's like, well, can I do something sort of shorter and faster? And hopefully John Oliver calls at that moment and I get to go play with them. So I love the push and pull of all of that. I think it makes me a better maker.
Great. That's wonderful. Thank you. So then, you know, you and I spoke about it briefly before, and that's the idea of the role of the choreographer in all these different sort of media. Obviously, the first and foremost is to move bodies safely, interestingly. I mean, that's the basic. But I feel like, and I'm sure you do too, and I'd love you to talk a little bit about it, is what is that role for you as a choreographer in each sort of different one?
This is such a good question. I think one of the things that's most interesting about being a choreographer is that the job description literally changes from show to show to show, right? If you were only doing musicals, it changes from show to show to show. If you're doing musicals and plays, it really changes from show to show. If you're doing musicals, plays, and television, it really changes. If you're doing musicals, plays, television, opera, it changes. If you have a ballet company commission, which I've been blessed to have a few at New York Theater Ballet, Ballet Spartanburg, you know, that really changes. And so for me, what's most interesting is trying to get to the bottom of what the priorities are of each of these different media and then meet those priorities and address those in sort of the right hierarchy with enough, hopefully, style and enough kind of flavor of, you know, my unique perspective, I guess, so that I don't get lost kind of in the format. I think I had a hard time in the beginning with ballet commissions of feeling like I really had something to prove about utilizing the ballet vocabulary in a certain way. And I think in the end, over the years, I think become more comfortable with sort of the kind of work that I make. And that's not really because I've developed like a style. It's just because I can look back at so much of it now and recognize a through line, you know, that I hadn't known was there. But I think, you know, I love, again, like in opera, it's so much about scale and moving, talking about moving bodies. You know, at the Met, we had a chorus of 100. And so there's no other place where you really get the chance to do that. And so that was an absolute, you know, pleasure to be able to just design, you know, tableaus with that many bodies. I think you also have only about 8 hours of rehearsal with the chorus, and so it's not about precision, but it is about a sort of epicness and a force of nature, and I think that's a thrilling thing to be part of. I think, you know, in my dance company, that work is probably the most personal, and it's the work where there's the least amount of filters between me and the dancers and between me and the audience, and so that's incredibly meaningful work for me, and that is also the work I was going to say that I prepare the least for, but that's really not true. I probably prepare more for that work than any work in terms of writing grants and fundraising and planning seasons and producing and engaging collaborators and imagining how it fits into our rep. But I would, you know, say that in terms of making up dance steps or movement material, I do the least amount of that with my company. I'm the most comfortable walking into the room knowing a piece of music really well or a score really well, and then being entirely kinetic and sort of seeing what comes out of me in that moment. And those dancers that I've been working with for so long are masters at basically replicating that movement almost immediately, and then sort of always showing me something back that I hadn't known was there, which then spurs me on to the next choice. So it's just an incredibly delicious tennis match with that group of people. I think in theater, you know, I absolutely love actors, and I love collaboration, and I love being in the service of one idea and one story and one vision. And though I'm excited about the day when that one vision is my vision, I've, you know, worked with so many extraordinary directors. Really an amazing list of directors. And I think that I've learned different things from all of them. And some of those relationships, and I'm thinking in particular at this moment of my relationship with Lear de Bessonnet, who's a brilliant visionary who founded the Public Works Program of Radical Participatory Theater, making these 200-person spectacles in Central Park at the Public Theater. And I'm thinking of also Ed Iskandar, another absolutely visionary artist who started a theater company in his apartment called Exit Pursued by a Bear, where the company provides a meal and then invites an audience who watches a play and eats a meal served by the actors and then sees the second act of a play. And then it evolves into a party and a free-form choose-your-own-adventure ending of the night. You know, those are two directors who I have found an incredible synthesis with, where we share similar values and there's a lot of crossover of what we're interested in aesthetically. And so those collaborations have been the most satisfying because I'm able to bring my full self to the table and not feel like, you know, I have to kind of limit my, you know, which isn't to say that I don't understand my position in the room as a choreographer. I certainly do. But I'm definitely at a point in my life where I'm looking for theater experiences where it can be a really genuine collaboration, where everyone feels empowered to have a voice at the table. So I love bouncing around from all of these different areas. And I think that, it takes a little bit of time to figure out what are the key things that you really have to hit. I love, in fact, when I'm working on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, Liz Stanton, the executive producer there, is an absolutely marvelous producer, and she gives very clear directives. Usually we have a phone call about 5 minutes of her explaining the segment or the idea to me. And it's usually, I have a lot of freedom, but there's also a few very specific details that Liz actually herself will kind of lay out. And so I know that a priority when I'm working there is to deliver those details that she has really articulated clearly. And I think that's very fun. I absolutely love the idea of going in and making something very, very quickly and turning it around and then changing it on a dime and shooting it in different ways and responding to producer notes and then John's notes. And I'm astounded by the writing staff there and their ability to work so quickly. And so that's like a totally other challenge that I think is interesting. I kind of just love them all. For a long time, I tried to figure out like which one of these is my thing. And I finally realized they're all my thing. And I think that's my thing.
That's great. No, I love that. I'm finding also that it's much more satisfying to work in different media, and that some use all of you and some will use a specific part of you, and to vacillate between all those. I'd love to speak a little bit a little more closer in on how you approach each project differently, like for theater, for concert dance. You sort of spoke about that being used as a choreographer there, but your approach to them a little bit more. And also, I'd also like to say, I think you can agree with me on this. You don't have to.
We'll see. Lay it on me.
But I try to explain to people that in the concert dance world, which we'll say is a modern and ballet world, the choreographer there, it's usually their company. So they're what we would call in the theater world, the choreographer, the director, the writer, the producer, sometimes the lighting designer, the costume designer. So, you know, you still have that mindset as you go into theater. And so it's finding a way of working within that realm and bringing what you need to, but also, as you said, knowing where your place is in the room. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting.
Yes, riding that line and the switch back and forth of that is very fascinating. I mean, I think, you know, if I was like evaluating myself, I do think that I have over 20 years and something like, I think I've done 26 new musicals and I've done, you know, it just like 40 productions. And, you know, you learn by doing and you refine by doing, I guess I should say. And so I do think that I've gotten very adept at fulfilling the choreographer role in a play or musical in particular in a way that is helpful to the director and to the actors, and hopefully illuminating and useful to the audience, and fulfills what the producer needs. And I think, you know, that's probably why I have had, you know, been able to sustain a sort of career for the amount of time I have, and why I keep getting invited back, I think. So it's an interesting thing that you raise, and I do feel that tension. And when I was younger, it was harder to make that switch, actually. I had a couple of, like, really false starts in the first few jobs, not because I wasn't excited about the show or the material or the collaborators, but I was basically finding out, sort of through trial and error, how to make that fit into a slightly different container. I think that, you know, the process of approaching the work, again, it is really entirely defined by the media. And so, you know, on a play like I did Picnic for Sam Gold. And so I think that, you know, a work like that involves, first of all, reading Picnic by William Inge and a couple times, hopefully, and, you know, understanding something about that play, and also, of course, analyzing what the moments of movement might be, but then also thinking about what other moments might be lurking under the surface, or what might have led to that moment of movement, and why it is there. And then also knowing something about the time in which he was making theater. It involves, if you're, you know, potentially doing a show like that on Broadway, taking a look back at what the other work has already been done with that piece on Broadway. You know, knowing something really about, for example, Sam Gold's Picnic. That immediately brings to mind a different kind of picnic than another director. And so that tells me something about it. And then, you know, usually all of these conversations or projects begin with essentially one meeting with the director. You know, a really great director gives establishes the world that we're going to be playing in, and sometimes gives a few specifics or a few objectives, but leaves enough space to for me to bring myself to the work, essentially. And so after that first conversation, then typically I know sort of what the design is going to feel like, or what the period might be like, or any of that. And then I go into basically a deep dive of clipping things from everywhere. And I'm interested in social dance, in theater especially. And I love looking at, you know, pictures of costume and fashion and movement and posture and all of that. And so I usually make an enormous Dropbox that's very uncurated and unfocused. And then as I can maybe can start to meet with my assistant or associate on the project, and we talk about it, as I'm talking about the work, I'm kind of weeding out imagery and stuff that doesn't feel like it quite fits, until we actually have a pretty tightly focused, narrow set of research. And then I will usually show that to the director or the designers and the director. And then there's, you know, usually things that are really immediate positive responses, and so that tells me more, or things that are sort of directions that are not the direction, and that also tells me. And so I think it's just like continuing forward and basically like zeroing in more and more, targeting the actual thing we're going to finally be doing. And I think being able to make final decisions about everything from music to movement to steps, to the performance style, to, you know, just various choices on stage as late in the process as possible, seems to provide the best results in a way. And so, you know, I could kind of endlessly be iterating. And of course, there are deadlines and we have to go into previews and all of that. But I think I enjoy the beginning parts of a process a lot, actually. And I also really enjoy, this is so weird, I really enjoy like kind of interviewing for jobs and projects, because it's a really galvanizing way to force yourself to think about your point of view on a piece of material, or to really set yourself up to be able to take on someone else's point of view about a piece of material. And I think that sort of that process of preparing to either show past parts of your work that might have some relevance to the project at hand, or, you know, adjusting the storytelling of what your biography is so that you can sort of show the part of yourself that you think would be a fit for that project, thinking about, you know, what that project is calling for that's unique that you might be able to offer. I find all that really interesting, and it kind of leads directly then into that beginning phase you're talking about. So in theater, I love that process in theater.
Can you spoke a little bit about working in opera. And a little bit of with your company. Can you speak a little bit working with actors?
Mm.
And obviously it's different between a play and a musical and everything in between.
On Picnic, we had the most amazing, illustrious cast of people like Beth Marvel and Reed Birney. You know, they played a couple in the show, a married couple who were, you know, had a certain amount of conflict and drinking and, you know, so being able to make, and in fact, Beth Marvel's character got belligerently day drunk in the yard during this particular scene of dance. And so that was an entirely fascinating way to work with her. I mean, she's extraordinary. He's extraordinary. And also in that same play, we had, you know, two of our absolute best theater actors at their prime, working with an amazing director. So that was a fascinating relationship to explore in movement. In the same show, we had Maggie Grace and Sebastian Stan. So we had sort of two amazing young Hollywood starlet kind of actors who brought so much sexuality and beauty and heat and detail to their work, and being able to find sort of, you know, and their relationship is the relationship that is basically the inciting event of that play, and being able to try and to actually be part of the scene where that passion sort of is ignited, and then ultimately once that sort of genie comes out of the bottle, it's not going back in, and no one's life in the play will basically ever be the same, and that starts essentially with a dance that they have together. So that was an interesting and kinetic way to work, especially with two actors who are not used to dancing and have not been in a lot of musicals where they had choreography or musical staging. And we had Ellen Burstyn in the scene, and Ellen Burstyn was a joyful part of the scene in another generation, sort of sitting on the porch and witnessing all of this as a kind of elder character in that scene. And so the way that she moved along to the dance was very different. I mean, it was an embarrassment of riches of actors. And all of them had a different approach and a different way into movement. And so I think a large part of your work is sort of assessing that and seeing those actors and really understanding who they are and how they work and what they need at that moment. And in a company of 13 actors, it's entirely possible that there are 13 different sets of needs. And so I think being able to meet those actors where they live and help them in a way that is going to be able to be received by them is really the name of the game. The most dreamy part of that project was that in this romantic dance for Maggie Grace and Sebastian Stan, both of them were tireless in wanting to get this dance right. And so they both wanted to always dance it with me on as often as they could in rehearsal. And so I got to gaze into Maggie Grace's eyes as I would dip her, and that was extraordinary and certainly not an experience I would have in life. And then I got to be dipped by Sebastian Stan, which was a fantasy of another kind for me. And so it was like delightful to be able to literally be dancing with them and be, you know, sort of engaged in a rehearsal process where I was their partner, their scene partner in that moment. And so, you know, it's just an amazing, it's an amazing career, because you are asked about your opinion on the color of a costume, and you get to weigh in on that as a choreographer. Or the sound designer comes to you and wants to discuss how what he's creating is dovetailing with what you're creating, and is it aligned in the right way? And that's fascinating and a totally other world. You know, you're so involved with set designers. Beowulf Borat and I had the most wonderful, wonderful collaboration on Be More Chill. And, you know, that informs so many things about movement and musical staging and choreography. So it's just, you know, and dance arrangers and orchestrators, and, you know, it just goes on and on. I love how many different kinds of things choreography really requires from us, from our brains to our hearts to our bodies. It's endlessly fascinating. I don't think I would still be doing this 20 years later and feel like I have 20 more years to come if it wasn't constantly different. I'm obsessed with this moment in Be More Chill. I've been asked like what my favorite moment in that show is, and Stephanie Hsu sings this gorgeous song called I Love Play Rehearsal. I'm gonna cry just talking about this, that Joe Iconis wrote. And there's this Christine Canigula, the character, is a total high school theater nerd, like we all were. And she has this lyric that says, most humans do one thing for all of their lives. The thought of that gives me hives. I've got so many interests I want to pursue. And why am I telling this to you? And she gets flustered. But that like beats so truly for me. That is like the heartbeat of what I love about choreography and about theater in particular, is that we get to work a different way every single day we come to work. We get to work with a different group of people and artists every single day. There are new requirements. You know, when I get to go do Hunchback maintenance visits in Germany, and we're working on the show in German with an incredibly mixed up cast of Europeans from all sorts of countries and languages coming together, and we're telling that story in German for a German audience. And then, you know, 2 weeks ago I was in Japan working with our amazing Japanese company of Hunchback in Japanese, and working in a very Japanese way, and an extraordinary, extraordinary work ethic and process. You know, I find all of that so interesting. There's just no day at the office that's the same in 20 years. And so I'm really grateful for that.
That's great. I have one question for you specifically about TV, just because I started to do film. And I found it fascinating. It's a little different with, because you have an actual set, so it's still a little bit of a proscenium kind of look.
Yes.
But you can kind of put the camera anywhere. Can you speak a little bit about what that shift was for you?
I think every choreographer who has been making dances is, of course, considering a proscenium audience actor relationship, but has secret visions in their heads that you don't even necessarily articulate about what moments in your mind are actually close-up moments or what moments you would really want to see from the side. And so I think it's like you're a kid in a candy store when you finally get the chance to actually do some of that. I'm also studying at New York Film Academy and just directed my first short film. And so, funnily enough, the thing that I'm most excited about in terms of being behind the camera is actually not choreography. It's actually being able to get away from that and perhaps make some sort of, you know, indie family drama kind of idea. I think that's what I'm feeling fired up about. But at John Oliver, for example, there's been a couple times where I asked for an overhead shot and I said, hey, this ex-Rockette, this fallen Rockette pyramid, pinwheel might be really delightful shot from overhead. And they agreed and they hung a camera and made it happen. And so it has been really satisfying to have those ideas and actually get to see them realized in some cases.
I think we are out of time, actually.
Oh.
Is there anything else you'd like to say? I know anything that's coming up that you want to talk about?
You know, my dance company has this work, which I mentioned, which will be at Theater Row on 42nd Street. It's called The Girl with the Alkaline Eyes. It's a AI thriller, a dance theater narrative. It begins previews December 28th, and it runs through January 13th of next year.
2019.
Please come check that out. And we begin previews on Broadway at the Lyceum Theater, the oldest continuously operating theater on Broadway, for Joe Iconis' show Be More Chill. February 12th is the first preview, and March 10th is opening night. So those are the next two big things on my plate.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Chase. It was so lovely to chat with you.
Thank you so much, Wendy. I appreciate it. I can't wait to hear the other episodes in this series.
Me too.
This podcast was brought to you by SDC Foundation. SDC Foundation events and programs are designed to offer access, opportunity, and community to directors and choreographers at all levels of their career. To find out more, you can go to our website at www.sdcfoundation.org.